Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. I've been telling those of you who listen to the show regularly that today we're going to be talking about a movie that I was very impressed with. It's called Earth Pilgrims. And when I was looking at it, and I watched this about a month ago, and then I was reviewing it before the show today, I was so impressed with the beauty and not just the communication that's done through the film, but the beauty of what is filmed. And I want to welcome as my guest Ehan Deravi, who is the man that masterminded this wonderful film. And I want to say, Ehan, it's such a pleasure having you as a guest on the show.
Well, I'm very happy to hear positive comments about the film, which is not well known. I appreciate you taking the time, and I look forward to our talk.
I was very impressed, first of all, with the quality of the film. I have different films that are sent to me, and this film was made into four different segments. The first one was about a new direction. The second was about sacred attachment, as it was titled. The third was about metastasis, and the fourth was cosmic pilgrimage. Now, people hearing those titles might immediately start letting their minds go into certain directions. But I'd like to ask you a question. Why did you feel that this film was important for you to do? Because you went to different parts of the world to get this exquisite photography that you have. I wish there was some way I could show this to my audience. But how long did it take you to get all of this together?
Well, I'll attempt to answer all of those, which are all very important questions, I feel. Why the movie was made, number one, was as a direct result of spending the majority of my life in Japan. And for the last 20 years, I have been active as a public speaker and a lecturer and a writer on the theme of the strong possibility, if you want to look at it that way, that 2012 represents a turning point for humanity, that we're about to undergo, or we are undergoing, a transformation. And many people who had read my books and come to my lectures would always ask, well, what do we do? It's the old question, you know. Mm-hmm. What do we do then if there is going to be a big change on Earth? How do we get ready for it? And I decided while I was on a pilgrimage myself, I undertook a 1,300-kilometer pilgrimage through the mountains and the valleys of the island of Shikoku, a Buddhist pilgrimage, and I was 55 at the time, and I was feeling that my work had not really been that effective in assisting people to prepare for a big change. Mm-hmm. And I was reflecting on my actions, let's say, which is what a pilgrimage is for. And the idea came, well, if I try to express the pilgrim spirit in film, what does a pilgrim have that we can learn from that might help us to prepare for a very different time here, a transformative age, perhaps even evolution? What would be the metaphor, the model for that? And the metaphor and the model for transformation, change, and evolution has to be the pilgrim. That's how it all came about. So I went and got started on another pilgrimage, mm-hmm. which was making the film. I didn't know what I was doing. I had no experience at all. Never held a camera, never been behind a camera, and yet I decided to direct and script and do everything, and people would show up later, I figured. Mm-hmm. And they did.
Well, now, something that I find most intriguing about you as an individual is that apparently you have been traveling around the world for a good portion of your life. In fact, you've been through 75 different countries in your life. And then when you decided to settle in Japan, that obviously had a very significant impact on you psychologically, physiologically, emotionally, you know, there's just all of this, and spiritually. And when the photography was done, I was very, very impressed with the beauty of what you were showing in Japan, and also how you blended different factors of what you wanted to convey through the visual along with the narration that was put together. And you pulled things from different components, different countries, blending them, I thought, in a fascinating way. The first part, because again, there's four sections in the movie, Earth Pilgrims, you talk and you have a quote at each one of the beginnings of each of the four sections. In the first one, Carl Jung is one of my favorite mentors. I'll use that terminology. He's had quite an impact on my thinking. And you quoted him saying, "Your vision will become clear only when you look into your heart. Who looks outside dreams. Who looks inside awakens." And I think that is very well stated for that first segment, and that we need to really examine and be mindfully present with what's going on. Now, you introduced in that part, you have a number of wonderful, wonderful people, Satish Kumar, you have Graham Hancock, you have Nassim Haramein, and you referred to Master Rumi and Coleman Barks, you've got Renee Salas and Paul Temple and Wade Davis. You know, you've got all these wonderful, wonderful people. But I'll tell you what, I just fell in love with the Peace Pilgrim. This woman was, her name was Mildred Lissette Norman. She had just such a wonderful buoyancy. Now, she died in 1981. She was born in 1908. She died in 1981. Where did you get the film footage about her? She was just an incredible woman that just walked her walk in her own way.
Well, first of all, the visual quality and the putting together of the sections of the film, only some of that was me. Very early on in the project, I was flying by the seat of my pants. Normally, when you make a film, first of all, you have the whole thing scripted and written out. Then you go looking for money. Then you make it. Well, I did everything completely ass backwards. I just set out on a pilgrimage. And I took a little camera with me, and I figured if I'm going to do this, people will show up. And when I went to England to interview Satish Kumar, I didn't even have a camera. I was waiting for that to appear, because the whole theme of a pilgrimage is life in synchronicity. That's what it is. A pilgrimage is a true life in synchronicity. Moment by moment, what will unfold is a mystery. And you must rely entirely on the spiritual nature of reality to support you. That's what a pilgrim really is when it comes down to it. And who should show up right away at Graham Hancock's house? It was his son, his son Luke Hancock. And it turns out that Luke Hancock became the master producer and visual editor of all of this material at the very young age of 22. And it's him that we have to thank for all of the beauty and the visuals. Of course, our cinematographers, there were several of them, but it was him who knitted it all together. I was merely the one who was standing behind the scenes, kind of stumbling into the next position. So we have to give thanks to these people, to all of those who took part, and I agree. Peace Pilgrim. I had read her book, Steps to Inner Peace, 20 years ago, and for those of your listeners who are not familiar with her, here was an upstanding good woman. As you said, born, I think, 1908, somewhere around. And when she was about 40, she was so distressed at the state of the planet, as many of us may be feeling now, but she did something. she decided to give up home, family, job, everything, and to devote the rest of her life to being a penniless pilgrim on the roads of the United States. Now, that's an important point. Here was a woman, and she was a fine-looking woman, mm-hmm. and she, at the age of 40, dropped everything, put on a tunic, said, peace, pilgrim, no money, and she just started walking, and with a tunic that said, peace, pilgrim, people would approach her. She would never preach. And they'd come up and they'd say, what are you doing, lady? And she'd say, well, I'm walking for peace because the Cold War was going on, or I should say the possibility of atomic war was strong. And mm-hmm. so she would speak to people. And how I found her was through Friends of Peace Pilgrim, who are a group of people disseminating her work for free. They work by donation. So if you want the book, Steps to Inner Peace, you can order it for free so that anybody can get this book, and a whole group of people around the country called Friends of Peace Pilgrim support her. I finally tracked them down, and they were at the beginning not open to the idea of having her film images in a for-profit film or a commercial film. Mm-hmm. And I kept trying, and I kept connecting, and finally I got a wonderful individual who represents them saying, okay, you can use the black and white footage of Peace Pilgrim. I was so happy because, as you said, here was a woman who walked her talk. I think she was a saint, personally. Yes, anybody who can spend wonderful. 25 years walking for peace with mm-hmm. no money. She mm-hmm. slept out. She lived rough. Now, there was a woman who walked her talk, so I'm very happy we had her.
Well, she was just a joy. Every time she spoke, she just radiated. She just had, and as you said, she was a very attractive woman. She just
yes.
had this joy that just exudes out of her when you're watching her on film. And to walk the United States, as you mentioned, for 28 years.
Yes.
And she stopped counting after she reached 25,000 miles. She just kept on going. She said she just yeah. felt so good with this. She was so happy.
She said herself, I have lived a life of total happiness and total health and total peace. Mm-hmm. Now, those three things, which are obviously the three greatest treasures of human life, happiness and peace and health, she had all three of them, and she never owned more than at any one time a pair of sneakers and a tunic and a toothbrush. And she lived a completely full life. And this is why she's a great pilgrim, because mm-hmm. all true pilgrims, whether they actually walk the physical roads, and, you know, Satish Kumar made it very clear in the film, you don't have to go on a physical journey. You are already a pilgrim in mm-hmm. your mind if you are not attached to the things of the world totally, not enslaved to the things of the world. If you see life as a journey, and then as an evolution, as a spiritual journey, you're a pilgrim. You don't have to walk anywhere. Mm-hmm. So we're not proclaiming that people have to get out on the roads of the United States or anywhere and start walking for the spiritual health. It is simply an attitude of mind that we're attempting to convey, and some people find it useful to actually leave home and going a long journey. So mm-hmm. that's what I did, and I continue to. Now I'm in British Columbia. I left Japan. And I've moved on, so mm-hmm. it just keeps on unfolding, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And you brought up something that was in your second section called Sacred Attachment. And you had a quote at the beginning there, what experience and history teach us is this, that nations and governments have never learned anything from history or acted upon any lessons that might be learned from it. And
yes.
I thought that that was really so appropriate, especially for the world as we see it today. It's like we're going through reruns, but we're just wearing different costumes. This was a segment that was very poignant in that you went to Jerusalem.
Yes.
There was the filming in Jerusalem. You brought the fact out that the three major Christian religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, there's all of the battles that go on there constantly because they want to own the property there. Just so many things go on historically, and anybody can research that if they want. But you brought up something that I thought was quite powerful, and that was filming the Dead Sea. And what's going on at the Dead Sea?
In a word, the Dead Sea is dying. What I think you're referring to was near the end of that section, after we came out of Jerusalem, we were showing these massive sinkholes.
Yes.
There's an ecological catastrophe in the making right now in the Dead Sea that I believe is strongly related to, first of all, diverting the water of the Dead Sea for irrigation, because more and more people need water. But more importantly, I think, there's a massive business based on the minerals and the mud that comes out of the Dead Sea. And so it's really been tampered with. There's been a lot of human tampering with this sea. And suddenly there'll be a bus driving down a road and a massive hole will literally appear in the road. It will sink instantly. These are called sinkholes. And if you look up on the internet, sinkholes, Dead Sea, you'll get the full information about how serious an ecological catastrophe is in the making here, in one of the holiest, you know, traditionally holiest places of Earth. So not only do you have a spiritual, economic, sociological catastrophe going on in around Jerusalem, you also have an ecological one. And these are the Abrahamic religions that literally affect the majority of human beings. And all of them are failing. The environment is failing. Mm-hmm. And for people to bury their heads in the sand and say, we don't have a problem, really, we do.
Yes.
And that's
all
why the message of the program is important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. Now, your part three, one of the things that's mentioned in the second part, and Satish Kumar brings this across so beautifully, the aspect of detachment. That,
yes.
I'll put in a word that I've used frequently. We are merely custodians of whatever we are given in life. That's all. And if we're good custodians, we take care of what we have. If we're lousy custodians, we'll destroy, we'll maim, we'll do whatever it is. And there is an understanding that your movie brings out, and it's done so beautifully. And that is, look at the beauty that's being shown here. And if we want to continue to have the beauty, we have to be good custodians. And I think that that is a form of detachment, as he said, because we really don't own anything. And those are his words. We don't own anything. And I agree with that. I think that that's very true. And I know we all have various things that we invest in, whether it's a home or a car or maybe somebody likes to invest in diamonds or whatever. But the truth is, when we leave this experience, we're not taking anything with us. Nobody's been able to do that yet, to the best of my knowledge. So it's what we are and who we are and how we take care of what is around us that really makes a difference. Now, you'd have the third portion, which is the metastasis. And you had a number of different people in there, but Nassim, I was especially impressed with his comment where he said, if you change your mind, yes, we are in a critical situation, and you change your actions, you can change the reality. And a lot of people are beginning, I think many people, like the Peace Pilgrim, she's scattered throughout the film, and I just like her so much. But I really think a lot of people are waking up from being asleep. Would you agree?
This is the million-dollar question. Those of us in communities where we may feel that people are waking up, we tend to get the impression that many people are waking up because like attracts like. These are called attractor fields in chaos theory. You would tend to attract the kind of person towards you who is also moving along a spiritual path. And every pilgrim knows that. The people you meet on the pilgrimage tend to be at the same level of development or slightly ahead of you so that you can communicate. But I now have, in the year 2000, almost 11, serious doubts about a lot of the New Age talk of, oh, there are so many people wakening up and there's a great revolution and awakening happening. And I'm actually being a bit more sober about it now. And I'm going, really? It may appear to be the case sometimes, But if really there was a lot of people waking up on this planet, then you've got a huge conundrum to figure out here. Why is the planet in such an incredible mess? Why do we have more authoritarian, draconian government than ever before? Why is the government and the authoritarian systems getting away with blind murder if we're waking up? So I have a doubt here, and I put the brake on. I would love to believe that a lot of people are waking up, but true waking up is not that easy. There's the fake waking up, where you get a bit blissed out because you maybe had one or two spiritual experiences, but a seasoned pilgrim will know that that doesn't last for long, that there's a rain shower ahead and you've got to get through it, for example, and you may have to sleep out, and whistling just isn't going to do it. So I would like to think that's the case. I don't have any data to support it or demographics, and I do have a bit of a scientific bent because I write a lot of nonfiction books. I think it might be slipping, quite honestly. I think it might be slipping the way I see the world now, which means more of us have to become spiritual pilgrims consciously if we want to bestow something to our grandchildren that is not a complete and utter mess the way we've made it.
In your fourth section, you have the final title, The Cosmic Pilgrimage. And this is something that was quite interesting to me because you were in the Andes and you were with some people, the Andean people, and you were on a pilgrimage with them that they do every year. And you go into quite a bit of conversation. I don't recall the gentleman's name who was speaking to you, but he talked about the history of the people of the Andes and their belief systems regarding respecting the earth and everything about it. And I was so intrigued with this, and it's so colorful, and the people are in their costumes. Tell us about this annual pilgrimage that these people do.
Actually, this is the last section, the fifth section. Cosmic Pilgrimage was the fourth. This section was called Aini, which is Quechua word. Quechua is the language that was spoken all through the Incan Empire that at one point went from Ecuador down to Argentina. So it's really a language and a culture that goes all the way back through the Incas. So in the Quechua language, Aini means a reciprocal relationship with all that is. In other words, it is the traditional native understanding in all cultures, whether you're in the Amazon or in an Aborigine in Australia, whatever tribe you come from, you are born knowing that to respect and honor nature means that you will be respected and honored by nature, and therefore we must live a life in constant balance with an appreciation of nature, which is everything. The whole universe is nature, not just the earth. And the people, these Quechua people, are so sincere in their understanding of this principle that they deliberately put themselves through pain and suffering once a year. And the pain and suffering is that they have to hike up to 16,000 feet. It's not a vertical ascent to 16,000 feet because you're quite high when you start, but it's very thin air up there. It's very cold. And you can only take what you can carry on your back. And once you're up there, what you are doing traditionally, before it became Christianized, you are giving thanks to the water that comes from the glacier, at the base of which you dance and sing and pray for 3 days, nonstop. So we're talking about impoverished families, many of them deeply impoverished people coming from all over Peru, spending the last hard-earned dime to get on a bus, get to this mountain, hike up the mountain, and then dress up in their native costumes and dance and sing and pray for 3 days. And all they're doing is saying, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, especially to water, for giving us life, for giving us crops, for giving us food, for giving us shelter. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And, you know, their attitude is that the reason we have environmental problems right now, they take it very personally. Wade Davis goes into this. They think it's our fault. we didn't dance well enough last year. We didn't sing good enough songs last year. It's our fault that nature's falling apart. Now, if we people in the industrialized nations could even imbibe 10% of that understanding, how much would that help the planet? Because they feel it. They're not just going to green rallies here and buying organic food. They are sweating and dancing and hurting and suffering so that the earth will feel their pain and hear their voices and respond positively, hopefully. So they were my great teachers, those 60,000 pilgrims. It's called Koyuriti, which means the Snow Star Festival, and it's been held every year, late May, early June, forever. The last 400 years, it's become a Christian celebration. So they're all Quechua Catholics now, as most of South America is.
Yes, but they still honor and respect the knowledge of times past.
Exactly.
They've adapted to what was forced upon them by
yes,
the
indeed.
Missionaries that came through and the warriors. So they said, okay, well, we'll adopt something, but we're going to still keep the essence of what we have. So they really haven't given up their basic beliefs and understandings. Now, there is a glacier that is in the mountains there that I believe you said was shrinking.
Yes, the that's the source of the water. It's that glacier in the Sinacara Valley that they go to do the festival at, and it is shrinking indeed.
So the water source to them, they're aware of that change, and they're seeing that, and they're having to go even further before they can even touch the glacier itself. So this is something that is affecting them in a very, very deep way. But they're watching, they're looking, they're listening. And these people, this event, the babies are taken, everybody goes. And it was quite a filming of people honoring and respecting in a tradition that is centuries old. When I finished with the film, Ihan, I was so impressed with your photography, with your time-lapse photography that was in the film, with the butterflies coming out of their cocoon, and the beauty, the colors, the shots of outer space that are just incredibly magnificent, all of that. It gives such a visual poignancy, everything from the smokestacks of industrial complexes to other arenas. But more than anything, it leaves you with an awareness, I think, to become aware, to awaken, which I think is a very good thing to do. Now, Earth Pilgrims, where do people go to find out more information?
We also have a site, earthpilgrims.com. Maybe it's Mercury retrograde, but the server in Japan has been down for a couple of days. But if you check in within the next week, earthpilgrims.com, is where all of the English and Japanese information about the film is available. It is available for sale on DVD and for renting on Amazon. So Amazon will have Earth Pilgrims there also. You can order it that way. So I would recommend people go to Amazon.com and look up Earth Pilgrims, or to our site, and you'll find plenty of information. And hopefully see the film, enjoy it, and pass the message on.
Now, your other website is Japanthropologist. So you take JAP and then anthropologist is the word .com, Japanthropologist. And there they'll find out more about you. You've written a number of books, but this film is, again, a very special film, and I think that there's a lot of wisdom in it, and I think the thoughts of the various people that you have interviewed in this film leave a message that causes one to really, really think. And I'd say, if any of you listening would be getting the film, I would say listen to it, watch it one time, and just watch, and then take a little week or so pass by, and then go back and watch it again. And I'll tell you what, you'll find that the woman Mildred Norman, who was a peace pilgrim. She passed away in 1981. Will touch your heart and mind in a wonderful way. And all of the other people in the film will touch you as well. Ihan?
Yes, thank you.
You're very welcome. It's been a joy having you as a guest. I wish you nothing but the best with this film.
And thank you kindly.
When you come out with another one, let me know.
Much obliged to everybody listening, too. Thank you for the opportunity to speak about the film. Good day to you all.
Thank you. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break, and we're going to be back in just a moment. EarthPilgrims.com. Go visit the site. I think you'll be pleased with what you see. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Rio, host of the Hooked on Raw radio show on rawenergyradio.com. If you're interested in the raw and living food lifestyle, along with the real story of what's happening to our health freedoms, and you don't mind a little controversy, listen to my radio show and podcasts on rawenergyradio.com. Each week, we interview guests and cover topics you won't hear on mainstream radio. Get informed, healthy, and involved. rawenergyradio.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Telephone lines are now open, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with John Welshon's One Soul, One Love, One Heart. I know you'll enjoy him. We've just going to have a great time with that. And then Stephanie Eldring-Hoff is going to be with us on Thursday. If you want to know more about energy healing, this is a gal you're going to want to hear. Stephanie was with me at the women's show last year, and she's just absolutely delightful. So I'm looking forward to having her as a guest. And then on Friday, I didn't know that I was going to have a guest, and at the last minute, I was able to get Michael Cremo, who is known for his very, very expensive book called The Forbidden Archaeologist. And we're going to be talking about history, about the human race that a lot of people do not want to acknowledge, who our ancestors were on this planet millions of years ago. Fascinating discoveries that he has documented. And we're going to be discussing about his column, talking about how he found this information out and sharing some of those marvelous stories with you. So, again, we've got a great lineup this week. Can you believe it? New Year's. It's just hard for me to believe. We are going to be zipping out of 2010 with a great deal of speed. So we've got a wonderful lineup of guests, though, and they will be posted by the 1st. So that you'll know who's going to be coming on the Donna Sebo Show. We have got a dynamic January coming up. So just stay aware and stay tuned to bbsradio.com, station 1, and check always on show information on the Donna Sebo Show. You'll find out exactly what's going on. I was sent an email by a friend, and I thought that this was so cute. I had to share it with you. In fact, I'm going to put it in my newsletter that will be coming out on January 1. This is a 2011 contract. It's a contract for friendship. And this is how it read. I really liked it. I thought it was cute. After serious and cautious consideration, your contract of friendship has been renewed for the new year 2011. It was a very hard decision to make, so try not to screw it up. My wish for you in 2011, may peace break into your home and may thieves come to steal your debts. May the pockets of your jeans become a magnet for $100 bills. May love stick to your face like Vaseline and may laughter assault your lips. May happiness slap you across the face and may your tears be that of joy. May the problems you had forget your home address. In simple words, may 2011 be the best year of your life. Happy New Year. I thought that was great. I had to share it with you. That came in my email today, and I thought, that is really good stuff. Now, by the way, you can get in touch with me if you'd like me to give you a little bit of a intuitive insight. Call me at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Like I mentioned, this year, in my mind's view, has just sort of blinked in and out. And I came across something that Bill Quine wrote. He said, he asked the question, what hogs your time? And this is what he said. He said, we all know how valuable time is, yet somehow in the rush of work, it's easy to lose track of it. Such was the case with a certain hog farmer. His hogs were show-worthy and a brilliant reflection of the care and work the farmer put into them. But the rest of his operation, the facilities, finances, marketing, well, they were not in very good shape because he neglected them. So he decided he was going to ask a friend to observe him at work and point out what he was doing wrong. As the farmer performed his usual routine, spending his entire day with the hogs, his friend did what he asked. His friend watched everything that was done. The farmer took each pig to the pasture separately, fed each pig separately, and even supervised every mouthful. The friend, after watching him, said, doesn't this take a lot of time? The farmer looked at the friend and said, what's time to a pig? The reason Bill shared the story, he said, any leader who's been overwhelmed by a difficult task or loath to delegate a favorite one will sympathize with the farmer. However, you've still got to remember not to make a pig of yourself with your schedule. And when I came across this today, as I was getting ready for the show, I just had to sort of laugh at myself because I've spent almost 4 hours just taking care of emails. And I thought to myself, there is so much on my to-do list. And I usually am up quite early in the morning doing my reviewing for the show and all this kind of thing. And I thought, my goodness, I had the to-do list. And I went back and I reviewed my to-do list. And my 4 hours spent with emails really could have been utilized for some other things that need to be done more quickly. And I thought to myself, how easy this is. So I wanted to share this story with you because all of us, are very guilty of feeling that we can do it all. And that is something that I feel has been one of my biggest challenges. And I think part of it is because there is something of an indoctrination. And women are very, very bad with this. Men have the capacity, and I think it's, again, because of their indoctrination. No, let's delegate this. But I've known a lot of men that have tried to do things all by themselves, and it takes them many, many times longer than it would if they had someone to assist them. I know of a man who worked at remodeling homes. And when he would go and do the remodel, he said, I don't want anybody working with me. The reality was it took him so much longer to get things done. When he finally did bring somebody in that was capable of working with him, and he knew of a few people that could do this, when he was able to do that, the job went a lot faster. The extra hands, the extra experience, and he could delegate to another person, say, do this, help me with this. He was very specific, and the work went a lot smoother. We all need to remember, we have to look at how we're spending our time. Americans are known for being workaholics. Americans typically don't take vacations like so many people in different parts of the world do. They don't give themselves that time. We're there working, and if we've got a good work ethic, we're there on overtime, and we're there all of the time. And we need to remember, we have to take care of ourselves. When I'm saying this to you, I'm actually talking to myself as well, because it's very easy to get caught in that loop and forget to give yourself the time that you want. Now, if you're like Gandhi, who just absolutely loved everything that he did, somebody asked him if he would ever take a vacation. Why didn't he take one? He said every day is a vacation. So it depends on one's perspective. But I do think that in our world today with technology and all of the variables we got, sometimes we have to make a choice about what we're going to give attention to and what we're going to choose not to be bothered with. I know of one lady, a professional woman, that she and her family decided that they did not want to waste their time doing dishes. So they started using paper plates and utensils that were disposable, and she said it made everything so much easier because there wasn't the time involved with cleanup. Now, we may or may not want to do that as individuals, but each of us can make a choice or a decision about what it is we want to do for ourselves so that we can have a life that is going to be, shall I say, more balanced. It can make a difference if we do. So I just wanted to share that information with you because I think Bill had a good point there. And sometimes knowing how to manage what we do and doing time management is very important. And sometimes we have to utilize different tools or, again, maybe have someone assist us with what we want to do. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. 888-815-9756 is the telephone number to call into. Well, New Year's is coming up, and there is a beverage that has been enjoyed by millions and millions of people throughout the years with this holiday. Actually, it's celebrated. It's drunk so many celebrations, and I'm sure you figured it out. It's champagne. Champagne is actually the celebration drink in the minds of many, many people for anything that's, whether birthday, holiday occasions, New Year's Eve. It's always been a big tradition. And for dinner parties now, it's becoming very popular. There's all kinds of champagne that you can get. And they feel that champagne is one of the most versatile beverages to serve with food. So many times you'll have certain foods, they'll say, well, you just use white with this white wine, and you have it dry wine, or you have a red, a Merlot with something else. There's all kinds of opinions, especially if you're a wine connoisseur. But champagne just seems to go with all of it. Well, I'll tell you what. I've got some wonderful information regarding champagne that I think that you will enjoy. And if you want to, well, jazz up your palate and just enjoy something with good food, do you know that the United States is the second largest worldwide export market for champagne? That's right, the export market. And the United Kingdom is before us. So I've got some wonderful facts to share with you. So don't go away. We're going to take a break for just a moment. When we come back, we'll talk about a little bubbly and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. This is Donna Sebo. Don't go away. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Hi, this is Rio. I'm the author of the cutting-edge book, Hooked on Raw. I want to give you and your loved ones the gift of optimum health. So when you order my book, Hooked on Raw, which has over 350 delicious, healthy recipes, I'll include my new DVD, What's Not Cooking in Rio's Kitchen, for a half price. Just go to my website, rawfoodinfo.com, and click on Holiday Special. That's rawfoodinfo.com. Click on Holiday Special.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedros. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Champagne, that wonderful, wonderful liquid, the bubbly. I like champagne. How about you? Well, and by the way, if you want to give me a call, 888-815-9756. Well, you know what? When I found out that the U.S. exported, that we were the second largest worldwide export market for champagne, I was amazed. I had no idea that that was the case. Now, do you know what? When it comes to making champagne, there are apparently 8 different types of grapes. There are Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Meunier, and there's just so many that are involved there. But there are a combination of these grapes that they put together that give each of the champagnes its special taste. And there's such a wonderful, wonderful refreshing aspect with the palate when you have champagne and you're eating food. Now, they say with champagne, it's the only dry wine that goes well with desserts such as fruit and even chocolate. You know, I have a friend, but she doesn't do it so much today. But I'll never forget when I asked her what her 2 favorite items were when it came to food. And she said the first item was chocolate, and the second one was champagne. She said chocolate and champagne, and I'm very happy with that. So she still has pretty much the same attitude, because of just about everything, any event that you attend that she puts on, you'll find champagne is going to be right there, along with white wine and whatever else she might be serving. But you know, it is really interesting that it takes about 15 months for champagne to come into its own. And the more expensive champagnes have less residual sugar in them. So you can, with those types of champagne, you can have them with dishes that are going to be very rich, very, very flavorful. Maybe they have mushrooms and truffles in them. And even with various cheeses, champagne has this wonderful aspect that it just goes with just about everything. And another thing, for those of you that might be allergic to white wine because of sulfites, well, champagne is very low in sulfites. And it is something, sulfites are completely harmless in small quantities, but they're used in food preparation to protect against oxidation. So some people have a very low tolerance to them and might complain of getting a headache after drinking wine, even if it's just a very moderate amount. They're very sensitive to it. With champagne, the carbon dioxide in the bubbles does exactly the same job in preserving the wine. Therefore, there's no need for them to add any sulfites when they bottle it. And that's why many people find that champagne is very comfortable for them to have as a drink with a meal. It is not going to cause them problems. And there's just so many wonderful, wonderful selections. So if you go on the internet, You can find out a lot, you know, about these various wines and champagnes. There's just so much knowledge out there. But it's something that really is just delightful. And I can guarantee you, with chocolate, try a raspberry chocolate. Really goes good. Well, I know I was talking with someone earlier today who was in the East Coast area, and we know that they have just been hit with these horrific blizzards that have just brought in amounts of snow and created all kinds of chaos. The poor travelers that are stuck because of weather conditionings, the airlines have no control over any of this. And I know it's upsetting to people, but Mother Nature, when she decides to have her moments, there's really not a heck of a lot we can do about it. And of course, you don't want to be up in a plane flying when you have these intense weather fronts that come through, because the plane may not survive it. So it's good that they are as cautious and thoughtful as they are, but it really is something that's challenging to deal with. But I guess now in Boston, things have sort of cleared up and cleared out, and on many areas of the East Coast, that's supposed to be happening as well. So people are sort of digging out from the experience. But when you have weather like this, and it's really cold, you just want to have what's called comfort food. And I came across a recipe, a pork and bean chili, that seasons with jalapeno peppers. And you can't go wrong. I mean, this is something that really hits the spot. And with some freshly baked bread and a little bit of butter and a nice salad, you've just got a wonderful, wonderful, healthy meal here. So let me just give you this recipe that I came across, because it's really easy. You need a can of pinto beans that have jalapenos in them. And if you're like me, you'll always have some of that around anyway in your house, because those chilies just add magic to a dish. Well, you want to get the pinto beans and jalapenos that are in the red chili sauce, and there are special brands that have that. You're going to need about 2 tablespoons of all-purpose flour, 2 tablespoons of all-purpose flour, and then 2 pounds of boneless pork butt, and you want to cut it into 1.5-inch cubes. Now, if you don't like pork, you could use beef. You know, I'd even try it with chicken. It all depends what you want, but pork has a wonderful flavor. I really like pork. You're going to need 1.5 teaspoons of ground cumin, 1.5 teaspoons of ground cumin, and 1 teaspoon of garlic powder, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1 tablespoon of oil, 1 green pepper chopped, 1 onion chopped, 1 rib of celery. You want to cut it into 1/4-inch thick slices, and 1 can, 14.5-ounce can of diced tomatoes with chilies. Ah, yes, this is going to warm up the bod. 1 tablespoon of chopped fresh cilantro, and sour cream and cooked rice go with this very, very well, dependent on your taste buds. Now, this is all you have to do. You drain your beans out of the cans. You reserve the liquid in a bowl, and then your beans need to be put in a separate bowl. In a bowl, you whisk your flour into the reserved bean liquid. In the large bowl, you toss your pork with the cumin, the garlic powder, and the salt. And then in a large pot, you want to heat oil over a medium-high heat. You want to put the pork in, cooking it, stirring it until it's nice and golden brown, about 5 or 6 minutes. Then you want to put in your green pepper, your onion, and your celery. You want to cook it, you want to stir it until it's softened. That takes about 5 minutes. Then add your tomatoes with the juice, and then the reserved bean liquid. And you bring it to a boil and reduce the heat to low and cover it and cook it for 1.5 hours. And then you uncover your chili after that time, increase the heat to medium-low, cook it until meat is tender, and that's 1.5 hours more. And then you add the reserved beans during the last 15 minutes, and you sprinkle with the cilantro. If you want, put this all in a crock pot. That's right, and it will cook up beautifully. The meat will be tender. The flavors will be permeating everything that's in that pot. It is just going to be mouth-savoringly delicious, spicy, and really hit the spot on a cold, cold day. You also could bake it in the oven if you wanted. You could put it in a big pot, put it in your oven, and bake it for the 3 hours, and it will be like the crock pot. But I'm a crock pot fan. I think it's a great tool to use in the kitchen. Well, this is Donna Siebel. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with John Welshon about One Soul, One Love, One Heart. I hope you can join me. Remember always, you are the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo here. Manage your time and smile more. This is a wonderful time of the year, wherever you are. God bless. We'll be back here with you tomorrow. Same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.